KUOW podcasts are made possible by listener support. Become a new or renewing member today at KUOW.org.
Including the police chief. Election spokeswoman Kim Van Ekstrom says recall elections are pretty rare in King County. She says the last time it happened here was in 2004 when a vote was taken to oust a water district commissioner in southwest King County. A government news agency of North Korea today says that Kenneth Bae of Linwood led a Christian mission across its borders for many years. Bae was arrested in November, charged with crimes against the state of Pyongyang. Bae's best friends have described him as a devout Christian based in a Chinese city 200 miles from the border with North Korea, where they say he led a tour company. The North Korean government says the company was a front for something called Operation Jericho. The Christian Bible describes Jericho as a closed city with walls that collapsed after a battle won by followers of God. The government news agency of North Korea accused Bae of bringing 250 missionaries into the country to bring down the government and hurt the dignity of the North Korean leadership. An independent news organization that covers North Korea said this week that Bae told a church in St. Louis that he knew Jesus wanted him to be a channel to the North. Last week, he was sentenced to 15 years hard labor. The U.S. State Department has called for his release. I'm Lisa Brooks, KUOW News.
It's 10:06. I'm Bernard Ouellette. 60 degrees in Seattle and sunny. Forecast says expect sun all day with an afternoon high of 78. Support for NPR comes from Zurich Insurance, providing risk management and insurance solutions to help businesses meet their ever-changing needs. Learn more at ZurichNA.com.
Support from Garmin Nuvi.
I'm Bernard Ouellette. It's 10:06.
Oh, sun, sun, sun. Say goodbye to it. From 94.9 KUOW Seattle, this is Weekday. I'm Marcy Silman. Steve Scherer is enjoying the sunshine on sabbatical. Well, compared to last week, the Puget Sound region has been relatively calm news-wise, but there are always things to talk about on Fridays. And here to talk about them with us, three journalists of who I hold in great esteem. Joni Balter, assistant political editor for the Seattle Times. Knut Berger, the Mossback at crosscut.com, and author of Space Needle, The Spirit of Seattle, among other things. C.R. Douglas is here. Nice to see you, C.R., political analyst for Q13 Fox News. We could talk about sun, which is always news here, but let's not. Let's talk about the mayor. Yesterday, Mayor McGinn of Seattle was forced to admit that he knew in advance of a feel-good announcement that he made that was about turning guns that were turned in January into public art, that those guns, said guns, had already been melted down and made into rebar. That's one story. But the other part of it is that every day this week and for the past couple of weeks, the mayor has had some nice feel-good announcements about things like guns into peace bricks or a million drops of oil preserved, or there's some nice campaign. Is this the election? I look at CR because he's just smiling and nodding. This is it. This is what we're going to get until next November.
I think this is exactly what you're going to get. This is typical of election years for incumbent mayors. I mean, you kind of ramp up your press availability. So McGinn's not doing anything sort of out of the ordinary. However, the frequency is higher. I mean, you have one every day this week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. I went to two of them, but didn't go to two others. You know, McGinn's issue is that he's kind of been not a good coalition builder, and he has kind of been kind of had a rocky start, if you will. So these press conferences are perfect ways to combat those two things. I mean, just getting up and talking about something, whether it be helping internet startup companies or guns melted down, all that stuff, shows that you're actually kind of doing something. You are leading the city. You're in control. And secondly, they are almost by definition an example of coalition building. I mean, every one of these press conferences has, you know, three or four people behind him that sort of got together and agreed on something, maybe small, maybe bigger. But So it helps him, and clearly this is their strategy, combat the two big narratives, which is kind of he doesn't coalition build well.
And he hasn't done much.
And it drives his challengers nuts that he's doing this. The press grumbles, but I think he's kind of smiling all the way to the ballot box.
Now, Joni Balter, I have to ask you, you work at a newspaper where you, I'm assuming you send somebody to all these press conferences, but at some point, is it like fatigue? And you just,
well,
is he going to say anything really meaningful?
Well, you have to realize, so this is the sprint. It's already begun. We can tell this is the sprint to the primary, and then there shall be another sprint to the general. And of course, every day a decision will be made as to whether it makes sense to go to these. But if you're going to do these bite-sized programs, which is what these are, and there are politicians on the national scale who've had bad reputations and they've done the same thing, where you build a drumbeat of supposedly good news that sort of gets your name out there and people go, I didn't know McGinn was going to invite the school children of Seattle to submit their great words.
On bricks.
But, you know, this one backfired, of course, because what you don't want, if you're going to have these press conferences, they're not going to get played very well normally because they've got a little bit of thumbsucker nature to them. But what you don't want is what happened today. You don't want a front page story saying that the Tuesday one, I believe it was the Tuesday one, whereby the darling school children of Seattle are going to contribute to sort of an anti-gun message. I mean, this does nothing to reduce gun violence, but it makes people feel good. But to then find out that the melted guns are already in rebar. They did try to recover from that by saying that they would do another gun buyback and use that. But what you don't want is something that's kind of sweet and quaint to turn into a front page story whereby you have to say, oops, we didn't even have enough time or something to talk very clearly with our police department. So you saw the police department graciously say it was our communications mess up. We didn't tell the mayor, you know, enough in time so that he wouldn't stand there and say something like that. I mean, this is a minor blip. Yeah, especially in a week of all these. But, you know, that's just we're running to the primary now. We are all running.
All right. Well, Knut, you always take a nice historical look back, and you did on Crosscut today have a look at mayors of going back to the beginning of mayordom in the city of Seattle. A lot of mayors have come and gone and come and gone and come and gone. And this sometimes is the same mayor who comes and goes.
Yeah, occasionally, revolving door.
But so when you look at Mike McGinn and what's been going on through that lens, what do you see?
Well, one thing I see in recent history, and the kind of the point of my article was pointing out that the voters of Seattle are rather fickle about their mayors, and their mayors are often have been fickle about the office itself. We've had a lot of people who've become mayor and who have quit to do something else. They didn't like the job, or we've also had mayors who've been recalled. But one thing that comes through is that incumbency has never been a guarantee of anything here in Seattle. One of the mayors that we recalled, Frank Edwards, was recalled 1 year into a 2-year term. I mean, that people couldn't even wait
one more year
just to get rid of him. You know, they had to throw him out. You know, and so there's a. One thing I think Mike McGinn has learned, if he looks back just the last two elections, he can see two incumbent mayors who were defeated in their primaries. Mm-hmm. They didn't even get a chance to go to the fall reelection. They didn't, you know, they got knocked out early. I think CR is right about the political calculation. All mayors in recent years, you know, ramp up. I mean, it would be malpractice not to ramp up the press release thing at election time. Everybody does it to some extent. But I think CR's right that McGinn is making a point. And one of the points he's making is he's learned how to be mayor. That he, you know.
Oh, he says that.
He came in on a bike, but he doesn't need the training wheels now. He knows how to do the job. And one thing that might be fun for people, go to eBay. Type Seattle mayor into eBay, and you will see all kinds of publicity photos of Seattle mayors for sale on eBay, going back to the teens. Huh. And you will see a series of, you know, ridiculous publicity photos of, you know, Gordon Clinton or Paul Schell or whoever, in, you know, with shovels cutting ribbons, pouring concrete, you know, doing all those sort of silly public things that are absolutely part of the job. It's been effective, I think, so far for McGinn, because 6 months ago, the conventional wisdom was Mike McGinn was toast. The conventional wisdom now is Mike McGinn will probably make it through the primary and face one of his challengers. That's a huge narrative shift. And it's partly because, I think, because he has been seen to sort of get the basics of the job. The fumble that Joni is talking about is pretty funny. I mean, there's no way around it. He knew that those guns had been melted down into rebar before he did the press conference. He's come out and apologized for the fact that he fudged that. You don't want to turn a feel-good moment into a look-stupid moment. And the other part of it is, this is just my personal opinion, I think melting the guns and turning them into rebar is probably a better use for those guns.
And bricks.
And with Mike McGinn in particular, who's a pro-development mayor, I think he should get out there and say, we're turning those turned-in handguns into apartments.
And we promise we won't make Knut laugh because he's got the remnants of a cold, but you're doing it
to yourself. I'm laughing at my own jokes.
You're doing it.
He's laughing at his own jokes. He's in it on
We're talking over the week's news with Knut Berger, Joni Balter, and C.R. Douglas here today. And a couple things in that nice soliloquy there. One was the inevitability of this mayor making it through the primary. Joni and Ciara, you both nodded when Knut said that. So you think that's it? I was noticing that the 36th legislative district, the Democrats of the 36th district, which is Queen Anne, had a dual endorsement today of Tim Burgess and Ed Murray, not the mayor. Mayor didn't get their nod at all. So.
Well, here's what I was thinking as Skip was speaking and laughing at his own jokes. You know, generally speaking, Seattle voters are pretty forgiving, have been. It is unclear if they are still so forgiving because two recent mayors did not survive their primaries. It is likely, some folks are saying this, that if you consider that Mike McGinn had 19% approval in a recent poll, that is a bigger number than the number that all the others will be able to amass if they divide
by
80% that's left.
Right.
So that does sort of maybe get him to the general election. But that's not a good number going into a general election. No way is that a good number. One thing I wanted to give McGinn credit for here is that, you know, the weapons to words, even though it had the problem that we just mentioned, did attract the ire of Rush Limbaugh, which in Seattle is considered a plus. Mm-hmm. So on the day that this occurred and he riled up Rush Limbaugh, I mean, he was probably sitting there thinking, well, that went pretty darn good, don't you think? So anyway, it had two sides to it.
Just a couple things. That 36th district was really, it's the home district for Tim Burgess, so I think we would have expected him to get that. But, you know, no doubt this is going to be a fight. So the mayor is not going to win a lot of these legislative districts. But I'm with Skip. I think it's very likely he will make it through the primary. And I think that is a big change from just 2-3 months ago. A couple other things on these press conferences. You know, just because a mayor gives press conferences does not mean that the press goes. I mean, I actually went to two of the press conferences this week. I didn't go to the other two. KUOW was at one of the ones I was at. They weren't at the other one. So
we
pick and choose. You know, we do not cover everything the mayor covers just because they send out a release. And not all of these are, you know, necessarily just fluff. I mean, the press conference on Monday was everyone was there. I mean, every TV station, every radio. I mean, that was a very significant press conference about new policies for SPD recruiting, where they're going to relax some of the standards, even allow some sort of past criminal convictions, misdemeanors, to not be a disqualifier to come into the department. I mean, it's an attempt to sort of get a more diverse department. And so, you know, that's an important moment, important thing. But it's not that we all go to these, even though they are held.
We are talking over the week's news with C.R. Douglas, Joni Balter, and Knut Berger. We're going to take a little break. Lots to talk about if we're going to continue on politics. But there are other subjects as well, like the police, here on 94.9 KUOW.
Support for KUOW comes from UW College of Education, presenting the National Center for Quality Teaching and Learning Distinguished Lecture Series on topics related to early learning of science and math. Details about May lecture opportunities at education.washington.edu/lectures.
63 degrees in Seattle. It's sunny. It's expected to stay sunny all day, and they say we're going to hit 78 degrees. Overnight, clear sky, low of 54. Tomorrow, Saturday, looks like partly sunny most of the day with a chance of rain in the evening and a high of 75. I'm Bernard Ouellette. It's 1020.
This is KUOW's Weekday. I'm Marcy Silman, and we're talking over the week's news with our panel of journalists, Knute Berger, Joni Balter, and C.R. Douglas. And before we took that break, C.R., you mentioned new police recruitment rules, relaxing some standards. I think they're still trying to get the force to live within the city limits, but affordable housing is a whole other issue. But another on the police front, two things happened this week. Merrick Bobb, who's the guy who's overseeing the process of the federal compliance with the Federal Oversight Committee, went to the city council. I believe that was on Tuesday. And sort of the gist of what he had to say was that compliance isn't in the spirit of the rank and file yet. It hasn't filtered down. There's a lot of resistance, maybe philosophically, to implementation of the reforms that he's trying to oversee. And sort of along with that was the revelation that a fatal shooting of a mentally unstable man in February was not captured on microphone or video camera in any of the 10 police vehicles that were at the scene of this shooting, for which Acting Chief Pugel has had to step in and sort of be, I don't know what, like the good face, the happy face of all of this. And I don't know what this, you know, it implies to me that overhauling the police department is so mammoth that it's like a dinosaur that we can't turn.
Well, it's completely mammoth. And if you look at other cities, there's predictable resistance from the rank and file. So what Merrick Bobb said on Tuesday is what you could have expected. That is to say, there's resistance. There has been resistance from the Guild. You've heard it in Rich O'Neill, the president of the Police Officers Union. The question's going to be, how long will that resistance last? Because the DOJ is not going away. They will be here as long as it takes to reform the department.
Right.
They were in LA for over a decade, maybe 9 years, I think it was. So this happened in LA where the union resisted, the officers resisted. They don't want to be pushed into reform. And then they get, actually in LA, what changed is they got a very, very reform-minded chief.
Right.
And that drove reform, and actually that culture changed there. But it didn't happen overnight. It will not happen in Seattle overnight, but it has to happen eventually because the federal government is not leaving.
Because there's no choice.
No choice.
Well, that's kind of how I interpreted Merrick Bob's presentation, and I'm dying to call him Bob Merrick.
I do that, unfortunately.
Every time I look at it. Anyway, but what he seemed to be trying to say is, look, so we have an interim police chief, Jim Pugel. Don't lose momentum. Then he seemed to be, I mean, if you look at it long term, he seemed to be saying, just because we're going to do a search isn't going to change the need for these reforms to occur. I'm here to tell you, we're having a hard time sort of pushing it all the way into all the ranks of the police department, and I'm not going to let up. And you can't let up. He even was talking about some ways, how can you convince the rank and file that the new changes coming in actually benefit them? Because there's more accountability, so people won't be accused of things that they don't feel they did. There'll be accountability. So it's an ongoing sales job, and I think that's what he was saying.
Well, it seems
all the changes that are coming.
It puts a Jim Pugel in a very difficult position. I don't know how he was regarded before he was placed in this interim chief job, but despite all the dirt that's coming out of his closet, it just seems that nobody could really accomplish this as an acting chief, that you're just the fall guy.
Well, I agree. I mean, you need an acting chief, and the department has to function, but I think it really speaks to who's going to be the next chief. You really need somebody who's steeped in a different culture to affect the cultural change. It's, I think, It's really hard to do it from the inside out with somebody who's been a big part of that culture. And the thing is that the police cultures, the whole kind of closing of ranks, I mean, that's part of what makes a police department effective. It's a survival tactic. Mm. It's
Code blue, they call it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's sort of us against the world, having each other's back, having our own codes, bonding through trauma. I mean, it's understandable why these are very challenging cultural transformations. I think Joni made exactly the right point when she said that the job is to have somebody who's experienced another way of doing things be able to persuade people that the new culture will be as good or better for them than the old culture. And you have to have somebody who really gets that and who's experienced that.
Well, we're not going to get that until a mayor is elected. I don't think, are we?
Well, no, I think that's what the point was. Don't lose the momentum while we wait, because most scenarios, somebody correct me if I'm wrong here, under most scenarios, there will not be a new chief until after the election. That's a lot of time. And you could lose a lot of momentum if you just sort of sit there and go, well, we don't have to worry about it. And so I think he was saying to Mr. Pugel, you are there, let's go, and then we'll talk about the next transition.
And Pugel seems to get
that. Oh, totally.
And the question is, and I think there's a reluctance to remove any sense that he might not get the job permanently because it would undercut his effectiveness by turning him into a lame duck.
But the problem is, as an interim, you're always seen as temporary. So when you try and exert, a huge culture change, when you try and implement this real big reform agenda, there's a lot of people saying, I'm not really going to bother because you're not going to be around that long.
It's a fascinating thing. Does it have any impact on who we might elect as mayor?
Well, certainly police chief is part of the mayoral debate. It is always everything police is brought up.
Sure.
By one of the candidates, Councilmember Bruce Harrell, Tim Burgess. These are big issues. Police, it's a big issue because you've got this federal hand over you, and so no one's going to ignore it. That does tend to be the press conference that's covered. Mention police and mayor, and you're going to get a bigger crowd.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it'll be interesting to watch. Go from police to the other huge issue that looms over the city, which is development. And one of you mentioned, was it you, Skip, about the rebar? The city council finally did pass the rezone or the upzone in South Lake Union. And I guess it was inevitable, but I'm wondering if it's a good deal for the city, the citizens of the city as a whole.
I think it is a good deal. I mean, listen, you do not make upzones in a vacuum. They are in a context. And the more you upzone South Lake Union, the more you absorb growth in that part of town, the less you're going to have to make hard decisions in other places. Ballard, Columbia City. I mean, these places that really do resist growth, you're going to have to sort of double your up zones in those places if you don't accept a lot of growth in South Lake Union. So I think it is the right move for the city. I mean, there was sort of tweaking with should they be 16 stories or 24 stories and how much affordable housing should you require. But there was virtually no one who was saying that we should not significantly add more density to South Lake Union.
There were a couple people, but
no one on the council.
Yeah, no, none of the council members, right? Joni?
Well, I thought the Weekly had the funny take on it, mentioning that it took Tolstoy 6 years to write War and Peace, but it was 8 years to write the South Lake Union plan. That was pretty funny. But they do have a plan. And, when you look at the Seattle skyline, to me it feels like you'll see over right before your eyes the stretching of downtown. Mm-hmm. It won't be called downtown, but it'll be the urban core of the city is now stretching northward rather dramatically with 300-400-foot residential towers, a whole bunch of them that are 24-story and many that are 163, that are 160 feet down from 240 after that battle. Mm-hmm. But this has been, we've been talking about South Lake Union around here for a long time. And to finally have a plan, to have some of a charge that creates affordable housing. I mean, look at what's going on in that neighborhood. I've been working in that neighborhood for many years, and it has changed in front of our eyes. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, well, that's definitely true. It's interesting. I often see it from the water side, and you look up and you see the new Mohai and the little park, which I think are going to be sort of in the shadow of these big buildings. Or that's what I imagine, you know, sort of looming towers.
It'll take a while for it to all get built out. They've limited the heights on some of the towers, but it's going to be very different, I think. Joni's right. It'll just seem like an extension of downtown. CR made the point about if you take a bunch of density there, maybe it takes some pressure off of some of the neighborhoods. Although I think there'll still be a lot of, there's still a lot of anti-density angst over both apartments, which is an issue before the council now, and also with the transit oriented development around the light rail stations and that kind of thing. But, you know, presumably this should be a sponge that would suck up
a lot of the growth. One of the development stories, actually a construction story that I saw and then couldn't retrace and find where it was about the merchants along where the seawall construction is going on. Still angry at the city and actually filing a more official protest saying that the city's not doing enough to help reimburse them for lost business. The city said that, you know, we're not doing construction, I believe, from the end of May till the beginning of September, till Labor Day. But these merchants are still really angry about loss of business, loss of tourism, potential economic impact in that area. And I that's one where you could see from both sides, because this is work, the seawall, as I understand it, we have to do the seawall work or it's just going to crumble into the sea. Maybe I'm wrong.
Remember the seawall vote was around, 80% in favor of doing that?
The city has agreed, as you say, to kind of limit construction on the seawall for the summer months. What the fight really is over down on the waterfront with the merchants is that September is a very good month for them. So
they want one more month.
They want one more month. They would like to go through October. It's going to be a war zone down there during this construction. So they want as much help as possible. The downside of sort of extending a month is you could then push out seawall construction even another year. I mean, you sort of lose a month.
Because construction season is the same season as tourist season. I mean, it's not all that fun to
Right. So I think it's a 3-year project. Right. If you lose sort of 3 key months over the course of 3 years, you may sort of add a whole nother season to it. So, you know, they're trying to say, hey, are you really wanting another year of this, or can we do this, you know, in a more compact manner time wise? The merchants think you can still do it in 3 years, but you know, that's the fight, is how disruptive it's going to be for those summer months.
It's going to be disruptive.
People like the change theoretically, but they want it to be painless.
Mm-hmm.
And all of us do. I mean, all of us think, oh, yeah, light rail is great, but I want to still be able to drive to work until it's built or, you know, whatever. I mean,
highway.
One of the problems is we're doing so much stuff at once. And it's interesting because we talk about heights at South Lake Union, but the real challenge in some ways is going to be at the ground level at South Lake
Absolutely.
Union. How can you make that into an actual a neighborhood that people want to walk around in and that doesn't have that kind of, which right now it's in a transition. It has a kind of, not all of it, but many parts of it have a kind of sterile, you know, large buildings, empty streets, mm-hmm. who's there kind of feel with this new construction that looks a lot like Bellevue, you know, that kind of a thing. And then there's this sort of irony, which is where there's incredible vitality, 4 million people a year shopping on the piers.
Mm-hmm.
we're going to disrupt that. So it's like you're trying to create something new and seed it in a way that's very difficult to do. And on the other hand, you're taking something that kind of works and breaking it. But as you point out, the seawall has to be built. So part of it is just we're trying to swallow a cow. It's you know, if you begin to add up all these projects, and I think people are going to get a lot more frustrated in the next 3 or 4 years
People were frustrated, when the transit, the tunnel formerly known as the bus tunnel.
That's exactly what I've been thinking of. We grow in fits and starts. The city is growing dramatically right now. There is so much building on Capitol Hill, Ballard. But we've done this before, exactly the time that you're referring to, Marcy, when the bus tunnel was under construction and everyone was so angry at the detours and the congestion downtown. The downtown businesses were very upset. I remember this comedian came to town, Martin Mull, and he said, you know, he'd never been to Seattle. And he said, you know, I'm walking around, there's cranes everywhere, there's construction everywhere. So it's going to be a nice town when it's finished. And so it has that same feeling again. So here we are, we have a seawall because we don't want the sea to surge in. We are doing so many different big road projects. Then at the sort of granular level, we're building up to accommodate all these new residents who are coming here from places like Amazon.
Right.
You know, so it's I don't know about everyone else here, but my commute has increased dramatically. I allow more time to go everywhere.
I want to just give a quick defense of South Lake Union. I know it's not Canute's favorite part of town, but you know, 20 years ago, this is what they were trying to do in Belltown. I mean, the council approved a big rezone, and they wanted to make Belltown this just vibrant, sort of Vancouver-like place, mm-hmm. all kinds of residents, all kinds of street activity. And that really hasn't worked. Yes, you have had more density in Belltown, but it's not become this great, vibrant neighborhood that we all just can't wait to go to. South Lake Union does have the seeds of that. I mean, it's much more interesting, I think, in Belltown. You got Mohai. You have that beautiful South Lake Union Park. I think the streetcar has kind of added an interesting energy there. I think that sort of Westlake and Denny crossroads with sort of Whole Foods, that plaza. You've got that outdoor basketball court. Over in Cascade near REI, you have that great playground. I think a lot of interesting things are happening in South Lake Union. I think it's got a potential to sort of be what they had hoped Belltown was going to be. Mm-hmm. I'm a fan of its direction. It can be a bit sterile in some streets, but even along Westlake, it's got some interesting stuff.
I'm trying to visualize because, of course, the streets look so different from the street than they did 5 years ago.
Oh,
that it's easy to get lost if you've been here a long time. We're talking over the week's news. C.R. Douglas is here, Joni Balter, Canute Berger. A lot to talk about. We're going to take a break and talk about basketball teams when we come back on Weekday on KUOW.
Join KUOW for the 2013 Seattle International Film Festival, May 16th through June 9th. Now in its 39th year, SIFF is the largest film festival in the United States, showcasing 447 films from 85 countries this year. Learn more on the events page at kuow.org.
64 degrees in Seattle, heading towards a high today of 78 with sun all day. Overnight, expect a clear sky with a low of 54. And tomorrow, Saturday, partly sunny. The chance of rain is in the evening, and we expect to reach 75.
Support for KUOW comes from For Your Eyes Only in Wallingford, presenting the Spring Eyewear Collection by Beausoleil for one day on Saturday, May 11th from noon till 5 p.m., located in Wallingford Center with parking provided. Learn more at foryoureyesonlyoptical.com. Eyewear solutions for work, play, and life.
10:38. Remember that massive explosion last month at a fertilizer plant in the town of West Texas? There's been an arrest in that case, a paramedic who was one of the first on the scene. We'll have more on that in the news at 11.
This is Weekday. I'm Marcy Silman. It is Friday, and we are looking at the week that was here in the Central Puget Sound region with C.R. Douglas, Joni Balter, Canute Berger. And before we leave all the construction behind, Nick wants to know if you think that the city's goal to be carbon neutral in the less than 50 years, how can we balance that with all these road projects that we're working on, in particular the Mercer, two-way Mercer? Doesn't it seem like we're heading in opposite direction than carbon neutral?
To me, it seems like there are a lot of projects. So there's construction for new streetcars. There are a lot of bike lanes, those you know, cutaways to separate and protect the bike riders. So it's actually, it's everything. So
I think it depends on what's going to be riding on those roads. And what, 2050 is the goal, so 37 years. I mean, you could have all kinds of electric cars and cars that run on, you know, I don't know, water. So I think it's a long time out to
I'm big on jetpacks myself.
To know what the world's going to be look like and, you know, and how difficult carbon neutrality will be in 2050.
But I don't think I'll be around to see it, so unless we have some new miracle of modern technology. All right. From roads and construction to sports, the NBA owners will meet, I think, on Monday. That's the last that I heard. They seem to be moving that date. This is the final vote, they say, on whether the Sacramento Kings will move to Seattle. It doesn't look likely. So what happens next for Chris Hansen and his sport lovers?
Well, you know, okay, so it does appear that on Monday the vote will go against Seattle. And there was a tweet that was referred to
Wednesday. They meet Wednesday in Dallas.
Okay, there was a tweet that was referred to from the owner of the Miami team talking about that, you know, this is the way this game is played. So Sacramento was pushed against the wall. You're going to lose your team if you don't perform in the way the NBA kind of likes, whatever that means. So Sacramento sort of hurries and puts together something. So what the tweet was about was that it's not anything Seattle did or didn't do. It's that Sacramento did respond in the way that they're supposed to respond. So it's if the vote goes as we expect, which is in favor of Sacramento, it's a vote in favor of what Sacramento did. But that is not the end of the game for Seattle, because this gets so complicated. The family selling the team prefers the bid, the higher bid, from Chris Hansen and the Seattle group. So what if this could be, what if Hansen somehow prevails and owns the team but can't move it? So then it's a waiting game. What happens in Sacramento next? They have I don't know how big a deal it is, but a lawsuit about the taxes. They will or won't get everything they promised. And so it could be a waiting game like that. Or they just wait for another team, or they keep pressing for expansion. So it's not over. It's just
over. Sort of over.
Yeah.
Over number one.
Chris Hansen has become the best thing for the value of the NBA since LeBron James. This guy is throwing money at this team, wants it so bad, kind of not even worried about the bottom line anymore, as I can tell. And that is not just increasing the value of the Sacramento Kings, but that has increased the value of every single NBA owner's team. I mean, that becomes the new baseline.
They should love him then. They should
vote
in favor of
him. And that is why they don't want this resolved very quickly. I mean, the best thing you can have is sort of this competition going on, and having sort of denying Seattle a team immediately when you still have Chris Hansen with all kinds of money and a stadium arena deal that doesn't expire for 5 years. I mean, he's out there. So don't give him Sacramento, but let, you know, so then every other team that sort of has a problem with their own jurisdiction, wants a better tax break, wants a new arena, can say, hey, Seattle, we're going to Seattle. Seattle's got this live deal, theoretically, for 5 more years.
Wow.
I would keep that alive. Don't sort of let them have a team. That will become the standard by which any market can sort of extract more out of their own city.
And immediately thereafter, after all this came down, that Seattle probably wouldn't get this particular team, Milwaukee starts worrying because they need some better arrangement there. But that will be for every city that has an aging facility, because that's how this game is played.
And you can always say, if you don't give it to me, I'm going to Seattle.
I don't know.
That will actually be sort of a real threat.
Can you imagine the hopes raised and dashed every year?
Well, I would imagine that some kind of behind the scenes deal will have to be struck, because it looks like Hansen, and let's not forget, it's not just his money. He's got Steve Ballmer of Microsoft, billionaire, in there, who's a huge basketball fan. And both of them have been acknowledged by the NBA as people who would be ideal owners for some of the reasons that CR was talking about. The question is, if they go ahead and enforce this their signed agreement to purchase the team, You know, one strategy is to do that, and if the NBA blocks them, then sue them for an antitrust violation.
Because when they have a contract, a purchase contract, right?
They do, and the NBA cannot control who buys the team.
They can just
so
they're where it is,
and they potentially anyway they could buy the Kings, leave them where they are, but then you end up with a situation that's suspicious, like when Clay Bennett had the Sonics and was supposedly going to see if the team could work here, and then miraculously took them home. So it's potentially messy, and the problems that Sacramento has is its arena plans seem kind of, you know, put together with duct tape and mm-hmm. paper clips and that kind of thing, and the fact that Hansen Ballmer Group are offering a ton more money, and the Maloofs need money. So it seems to me there's potential for some kind of agreement, whether it's, you know, sort of off the books or whatever, to try to get Ballmer and Hansen to agree to wait for another prospect, or even though the NBA said they won't expand, I still think there's the potential for an expansion franchise. There's never been, I mean, the interesting thing is that buying the Sacramento Kings seemed like a quick way to get the Sonics back, but it was never in the beginning. It was never the single path
exactly
to getting a team.
Exactly.
There are other options. The problem is people have gotten so enthusiastic about it. I think you're going to have people feeling angry and let down and mad at the NBA, and that's not going to help you with Plan B.
So a couple of thoughts here. Well, first of all, one fun fact is that Clay Bennett is the head of the relocation committee. So that just pulls all the anger in Seattle that it's, you know, the conspiracy theorists and all of that. But the rest of this is exactly, it never was meant to only be the Sacramento Kings. They were the guys that were going to put together the deal here in Seattle and then find a team, not necessarily
that
this team.
Right.
But they certainly concentrated on this because this one was available. What we don't know is which other one. And if you're in one of those cities, you're going, Have we pleased the NBA enough? Are we good? Are we good? I hope we were nice to Clay Bennett.
Well, I wonder, does this have any impact on the mayoral race? Just to bring it to the crass bottom line here.
Well, I mean, had this relocation decision gone in Seattle's favor, you would have had this big rally in Pioneer Square, you know,
beers on
Chris Hansen, you know, the mayor gets up, 5,000 people there cheering him on. I mean, he sort of denied that visual because of this, what I think is clearly going to be a decision against Seattle on the relocation. Does that, you know, kill his mayoral bid? No, but I do think this was a big thing for him. We talked earlier about kind of what his liability is. Well, one is, you know, can he build a coalition? Can he get people together? Can he sort of do stuff? And I think this was a great example of that. I mean, he got the county, he got this private investor. I mean, this is a big thing that kind of eluded the last mayor. So it takes the wind out of his sails. On the other hand, most of the challengers did support this arena deal, except for Peter Steinbrück. So,
and I'd like to just weigh in on that, because Peter Steinbrück has been very vocal and out front saying he doesn't like the arena deal. He doesn't like the location of the arena. If this falls through, it provides him with an opportunity and a lot of others for second guessing. Seattle Times had a really interesting interview with Chris Hansen.
Yes, it did.
And in that interview, he was partly responding to this idea that the new arena would turn that whole Soto area into a kind of outside the arena and south of the arena would turn that whole area into a huge kind of L.A.-style entertainment district. Hansen went out of his way in this interview to say, no, I'm not envisioning anything like that. I'm thinking I have one block of property north of the arena that I would like to make as a gathering place, but I'm not talking about an L.A.-style thing, which is poison in Seattle. To talk about importing anything from L.A., but also it creates this problem, which he was trying to defuse, which it goes to the whole point of Steinbrück and the Port and others' objections, which is, regardless of what Chris Hansen intends to do on his property, there are other developers down there who are poised to build off of that and turn that area into a big, you know, entertainment zone, as opposed to a place where we still have manufacturing jobs and blue-collar jobs and union jobs and that kind of thing. And so I think it creates politically an opportunity for Peter's message, instead of seeming like kind of an outlier message, to kind of come in and say, see, I told you there was more to this. And what is more to this is, you know, Hansen wants it both ways. He wants it, oh, I'm not going to have any impact, but, oh, I want to maximize my investment. Mm. And guess what? There are a whole lot of people around him who own property who want to capitalize as well, and that's part of the problem.
Well, and regarding the mayor's race, everybody likes a winner, somebody who can put together a win. So Mike McGinn, if you flash forward the months and think, okay, now we're in the heat of the campaign, McGinn had a victory there on saving the July 4th fireworks. So on July 4th, there will be stories that talk about Mike McGinn and the chamber came together and saved the fireworks. Flash forward a few more months. If the deal had come true, if it was approved, exactly around the time the voters were voting, they would have been opening up the Key Arena for the first Kings/Sonics basketball game. So that visual is not available. Remember, they were already selling tickets for those who wanted. So that's October. You know, so think about how close that is to the voting. And geez, Mike McGinn put this together. So he is denied that visual as well.
Interesting. Before we leave basketball and the Seattle Times, there's basketball diplomacy thanks to Tan Tan, one of your multimedia editorial writers, I think that's her title, sent out a tweet to Dennis Rodman to help free Kenneth Bae from his prison in North Korea. And Rodman actually responded and tweeted his pal, which I said,
do me a solid.
Do me a solid, which I had to translate.
Consult Urban Dictionary immediately.
Yeah. And she talked about it. She was only half serious when she sent that tweet out. So it was interesting, interesting to watch. Basketball journalism. Let's expand our vision just a bit down to Olympia. The legislature comes back on Monday. The leaders, theoretically, have been working on some sort of budget agreement this week, theoretically. But as Jerry Kornfield of the Everett Herald told us on Monday, it's really so nice out. It's hard to come inside and look at numbers. But for the last at least 10 years, we have not seen a state legislative body complete its work within the 60 or 90 allotted days, which, you know, leads me to wonder, why have it so short? Why don't we just go do what everybody else does and have a legislature that gets its work done?
I think it's one of those, you know, what's worse, having the legislature do damage and go home once in a while, or have them just stay around and do damage all the time?
Oh, I see.
I think the statistic was this will be the 41st special session since 1980.
Right.
That's
right.
A lot of special
sessions.
And
some of those have lasted hours, and some of them have lasted months. So,
and this one is likely to last a month. I mean, they're still very far apart, about $1 billion far apart. And I think it's a real test to Jay Inslee. I mean, he comes from a sort of, I'm a legislator in D.C., to now being in charge. You know, he's a governor. So is he going to be able to sort of transition into that role and kind of broker a deal between these two sides? He's clearly on the side of the House Democrats who want more revenue and the Senate that wants to hold the line on taxes. Gregoire was very good at getting people in the room and pounding out a deal. So far, this governor hasn't been able to do it, and that's the test right now.
Do you think he's seen as too partisan?
I think it's too early to say how he is seen. What is going on in Olympia is what happens. This is maybe sort of the most productive time in a way, even though it's so gorgeous and delicious outside. What you do is you get the four corners together. You get everybody else out of there. They're not helping. And you force them, you know, they're in a room and you force them to to horse trade because they're so far apart on so many things. The account that I read about, you know, looking ahead to the new legislature kind of took my breath away with how much they had to accomplish.
Yes.
In other words, they didn't do much in the first part. They didn't really get anywhere. They have transportation to do, a whole big giant fight on spending and revenue, if that's where it ends up. The gun bill, the Sonny Jay Inslee just kind of said, well, we'll do all of this. Like
in 30 days.
As if what have they been doing for the first 3 months, you know? So, but maybe because he is in those meetings, he knows that he can pull a few favors one way or trade something out the other way, because that is what it's going to take. I remember thinking when the background checks on the guns didn't go anywhere, I thought, well, what does the governor do? Is he going to leave it to the initiative, which has already been announced, or is he going to go in there and horse trade? Well, he seemed to be talking about how that even could be added to the agenda, which sounds like a ton of work.
Well, the big McGillas, you know, are the budget and education funding, yep. And they're interconnected, and that's the thing. And so it'll be really interesting to see if the private discussions and backroom discussions of the last 2 weeks have borne any fruit toward getting movement between the House and Senate on those issues. I agree. I mean, it couldn't be a fuller plate.
The only thing they're required to do, correct, is to pass a budget.
Correct.
That's right.
They do not have to do anything on guns. They don't have to do anything on sort of reproductive parity, what sort of abortion coverage is referred to as. I think it was potentially a mistake for the governor to talk about these other issues as big priorities for the special session. That is to say, movement on guns, movement on reproductive parity, movement on what they call the DREAM Act, helping immigrants get access to financial aid. I mean, he's got a big enough challenge just getting this budget deal done, especially in the context of the Supreme Court that's requiring you to put more money into education, that I don't see why it helps him to pick all these other fights, which, by the way, were picked and were lost in the regular session. I mean, these things came up and they either didn't get a committee or lost in a vote. So his sort of hold the line is to get more revenue to solve the budget problem. He wants to do that. He's staked that out. And to sort of muddy it with kind of an open-ended session that gets into the same debates that were in the previous session, I think is going to be a potential problem.
I just want to point out that CR's talk, it's reminiscent of the problems that Obama has gotten into.
Yes.
Where people are criticizing him for losing focus on the budget and the economy. Talking about guns, talking about immigration reform, trying to get those things through a Congress that doesn't seem to want to pass anything. And it is making the president look ineffective, and he is somewhat ineffective. It's not just looks.
And so it's making the governor the same.
Right. And it isn't that people don't agree with the issues that he can't get broad popular support. The issue is what you can do in Olympia.
Well, on the transportation, if you remember back to the campaign, they all talked about, we don't know when we'll do a transportation package. Could be 2013, could be 2014. So there's a little bit of face saving available there.
I mean, you have to have a budget by July 1.
Right. Something has to be passed.
As much as people might like it, you do not have to have a solution to guns. You do not have to have a solution to abortion coverage. I mean, all that kind of stuff. So
I should just say, as if you're a parent of a college student, you do sort of want a budget because nobody knows how much tuition is going to cost next year. It's interesting. Well, with that panel, next week we'll know what they're doing in Olympia because they'll be out of the closed doors and back into the chambers. Joni Balter, assistant political editor for the Seattle Times, Knute Berger, the Mossback at crosscut.com, blogging at Seattle Magazine, and C.R. Douglas, political analyst for Q13 Fox News. Thanks for coming in today.
Thank you, Marcy.
Great to see you.
Happy weekend to you.
Thank you. Our show is produced by Katie Sewell, the daughter of Ginny, with Jason Pagano, the son of Stephanie. Amina Al-Sadi, daughter of Melanie. Bernard Ouellette, son of Connie, is the man at the control board. I'm Marcy Silman, daughter of Maureen. Happy Mother's Day to all of you out there. This is Weekday on KUOW.
The top spire of One World Trade Center in New York City was installed today. bringing the tower to its symbolic height of 1,776 feet. More in the news in a minute. KUOW FM Seattle, KUOW Tumwater, KQOW Bellingham, and Digital HD Services.
Support for KUOW comes from Nature Consortium, working to restore the West Duwamish Greenbelt, providing arts programming over 300 days a year through a youth art program and the Arts in Nature Festival on August 10th and 11th. More information online at naturec.org.
It's a warm and sunny Friday in Seattle, and it's going to get warmer. 66 now, with a goal of 78 for this afternoon. Sun all day.
Support for KUOW comes from Northwest Associated Arts, presenting Michael Pollan, author of Omnivore's Dilemma and Food Rules, talking about his new book, Cooked, and exploring the uncharted territory of his own kitchen, May 13th. Tickets at benaroyahall.org.
I'm Warren Olney. On the next To the Point, as the Senate begins its long debate about immigration reform, Black American field hands in Georgia say farmers...
Thanks for listening. The program you just heard was made possible by the financial support of our listeners. Support this program and others like it by making a pledge today at KUOW.org.